Hello everyone, this is Kim Anami and welcome to the Coming Together webinar and information session. So here's a little bit of the lay of the land today. We are going to be, first I'm going to talk about, I guess, my background, who I am, how I came into this work, give you a historical trip through some sexual secrets, and take some of your questions. If you've pre-submitted them, I've got them in front of me. You can also submit them as we're on the call. If you're on the webcast, there's a little box to the left of the slide piece or slide section. And if you are viewing it through the webcast, if you hit the slides tab, that's when you can actually see the visual imagery that I'll be showing. And if you're calling in, then once it's, you know, if you have a question that you'd like to ask me, you can hit *2 on your handset. And then when it comes time to the open Q&A section, I will unmute you and I will answer your question. So, secrets to coming together. So for those of you who don't know me that well, I'm a life and intimacy coach and a sex relationship coach. I've been on a path for personal growth and wellness for over 20 years. And of all the tools and things that I've studied throughout the years, you know, the main inspiration for me was how do people change and how do people grow? So I've studied everything from herbs and nutrition, alternative medicine, different forms of exercise, psychology, philosophy, meditation, and sex. And sex was one of the most powerful pieces for me in my own growth. And then, you know, as I worked with people over the years as a coach, I would see consistently that of all the pieces that comprise a person's life, like their social life, their financial situation, their career, their friendships, their intimate relationship. The intimate relationship piece was the strongest and most influential of all of them, meaning that if that piece in their lives was doing really well, everything else was doing really well. And if that piece wasn't doing really well, it would usually suck everything else into it like a vortex. And because we live in a culture that's so sexually disconnected, people often don't identify that as being the missing piece in their wellness formula because they're not even really taught to think that it can bring or can have such an impact on their lives. You know, despite the fact that we live in a culture that really is so focused on sex and intimacy. So in addition to coaching people and holding e-salons and retreats, I'm also a writer and a speaker. I like getting on tops of tables with people and having fun. When I do write, I write usually in print for Playboy. I've written a few articles for them. And, you know, always focused on the same thing. How can we really harness the power of our sexual energy in our day-to-day lives? And, you know, basically because of this holistic background of mine, the way that I work is I'm always looking at getting to the root of things. I don't tend to give superficial advice or suggestions. My idea is to transform you from the inside out. And, you know, a lot of people think that I was born as this sexually fearless person and that all of this stuff is really easy for me. And maybe the sexually fearless piece is a little bit correct in that I feel like I always had a strong awareness of my own sexual energy. But in terms of intimacy, I used to be terrified of intimacy. When I was attracted to somebody, I would literally turn around and run the other way. I had this huge block about expressing myself and going towards what I really wanted. And so I would get into relationships and I would have trouble expressing myself and communicating. I would choose men, partners who were unavailable emotionally. But throughout it all, I always had this intuitive sense that sex was very powerful. And despite the quality of some of my relationships, the sex piece always sort of kept me going that, okay, there's something to this. This sexual energy is like this. And this portal that we can dive into and transcend something. And then I stumbled upon Tantra and Taoist sexual philosophy, you know, where they had been studying 5,000 years ago how to harness this sexual energy. And they looked at it as having this power and having this healing quality and that it was essential for our health on so many levels and essential to the quality of our intimate relationships. And it's interesting because throughout history, you'll see evidence of sexuality and I guess sexual magic and sexual philosophy that was at the forefront of these different cultures. And yet that's really like kind of gone to the wayside these days. So one of my favorite examples is, this is one of my just cherished images. I wish I owned this piece of art, but it's a set of penis wind chimes. And this hails back from ancient Pompeii. So you'll probably remember Pompeii as the ancient city that was covered in volcanic lava by Mount Vesuvius. So the interesting thing about this city is that it was considered a priapic city. This means that they worshipped the penis, specifically the erect penis. And there were penises everywhere in this place. They were water fountain statues that had foot-long penises. There were penises inlaid into cobblestone in the roads. They were carved into doorways as lucky talismans. And this is my personal favorite, these wind chimes. Here's another image. This is a 16th century Japanese woodcut. And in this picture, this man, you can see, is performing cunnilingus on the woman, and she is emitting a profuse amount of liquid, which he is collecting. So the essences, especially the ejaculate of men and women in other cultures, has thought to be this very powerful fluid. In fact, it's referred to in some places as the elixir of life or the water of immortality. And so I've been coaching and counseling this advice to absorb each other's ejaculate and emissions for a long time. And, you know, it's been reinforced by these, you know, this historical data, you might say, of people collecting it for that purpose. You know, so he's stimulating her to be able to collect that as a power drink and have it later. I usually tell people, you know, ditch the Red Bull and start collecting your partner's emissions instead. You know, they aren't the only culture who has thought that. You find this theme of female ejaculation, which has been considered normal for centuries. There's a tribe in Africa where 14-year-old girls are taught how to spray the wall by their aunts. So they're taught to, like, ejaculate on command. I know a woman who can ejaculate across the room. She does demos in, you know, sex workshops and the like, where she's brought in to show that she can make herself ejaculate like 5-10 feet across the room. So it's the only culture who has a problem with this, apparently, is Western culture, where it's considered, people don't even believe that it happens. And, you know, some people think it's urine, and it's true. It's a fact that ejaculation is real, and it's possible for every woman. And then we come to Aphrodite. So the most beautiful love goddess ever, I don't know if you know the story very well, but she was born on a sea of frothy ejaculate. And so I take this as like this archetypal idea that, you know, beauty comes from ingesting ejaculate and having that at your disposal. Here's another image where you can see the froth beneath her in all its full glory, just a little more clearly. But then as we go forward, we've had these, you know, censorship over things, over our sexuality throughout the centuries. It's been suppressed, and especially by religious bodies. And, you know, amazing films like The Story of O, which is a much, much, much better alternative to 50 Shades of Grey, was banned when it first came out. It was inspired by a book which sold over 1 million copies in France, which is where it came out. But it was banned in different countries.
The moderator has left the conference.
Hi there. I think I was disconnected there, so I'm back. I don't know where I left off exactly, but or where I got cut off. But the book, Think and Grow Rich, this is a famous book that came out earlier in the 20th century. And he talks about, it's really the one of the two main books that talks about how to create your own reality. The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Wattles is the other one. And these are the two books which basically are the foundation for all these future books like The Secret and Excuse Me, Your Life is Waiting, all these books that talk about how to use your imagination to create your reality. So in this seminal book, Napoleon Hill talks about how the way to create genius or to tap into your genius is to learn how to harness your sexual energy. And he writes a whole chapter on this idea of what he calls transmutation of sexual energy into creative ability. And this, interestingly enough, reflects all the ideas of these ancient Taoist and Tantric teachings where sexual energy was looked at as this potent energy source, and the idea was to learn how to harness it. And here is a great example of how to harness creative ability and talent and energy. So I just mentioned these ancient cultures. You know, 5,000 years ago in Taoist China, the emperors were coached by the courtesans of the day into how to fully tap into their sexual energy to use it so that they could become better leaders. They would be more wise, more charismatic. They would have greater physical health and mental clarity, all as a result of learning how to tap into their sexual energy. And, you know, I've talked about this before. There are many, most men have the experience after they ejaculate, after they lose their erections, or after they come, of losing their energy, and they get exhausted and they pass out, they take a nap, and that can be avoided. That can totally be averted. I talk about that briefly in one of the videos in my Coming Together video series, which is a free video series. And it's a very simple technique to learn how to tap into that and harness that energy instead of losing it. So we also see that, you know, in the modern world, great leaders of our time have learned how to harness that sexual energy. One of my favorite people, Russell Brand, has been heralded as the Shager of the Year 3 times in a row by the Daily Sun in the UK for his exuberant talents and, you know, ability to harness his sexual energy. And then one of my all-time favorite places where the ancient and the modern world collide is in a recent study that was done, I think it's about 10 years ago now, of semen is found to be an antidepressant. So the scientist, Dr. Gordon Gallup at a state university in New York, did studies between women who were thought to be, you know, measured by the Beck Depression Inventory to be depressed. And they studied women who were having lots of sex with condoms and lots of sex without condoms. And the women having lots of sex without condoms were actually able to reduce their depressive symptoms. And so they analyzed the content of semen and found that it's this powerhouse of nutrients and neurotransmitters and vitamins and hormones that basically make you feel good. So that's, you know, I kind of coined the term the cum diet after this to talk about this situation that semen is considered to be such an amazing thing. So I talk a lot about the idea of there's a disease of being undersexed or underfucked, as I often call it. And the article that I wrote in Playboy last year was on this topic. And then I constructed my whole How to Be a Well-Fucked Woman salon around this concept. And it's not just women who are profoundly undersexed in our modern culture. It's also men. And it's a quality that you can see. It's palpable, at least in my life and my reality. I come to read this energy in people. And it was read, and it still is read, in these sort of dysfunctional labels that it's given, like FSD, female sexual disorder or dysfunction. And then years ago it was called hysteria, where women would exhibit these symptoms of being unruly, depressed, lethargic, irritable, sad, prone to crying, prone to outbursts of crazy behavior. And the remedy was to have an orgasm. And so this is a prescription that I give to all of my clients today. And it manifests in so many different ways. So here there's a video that I have of one of someone who I've worked with, Britt, who's just this fantastic example of a well-fucked woman and in a fantastic relationship. She did what I issued a 30-day sex challenge to my people a couple years ago, and she and her partner took it on and they did solid 30 days of sex. And she talked about how much it deepened their relationship and how she didn't realize at first that sex was the glue in their intimate relationship, and it really was worthy of having that attention and focus put onto it, and that it really helped them to clear some blocks that had been in the space between them and take their relationship to a whole new level. And this is the same feedback that I've got from everyone who's ever done that challenge before. So most people subsist on a diet of junk food sex rather than the soul-nourishing, bodybuilding, gourmet sex that I often talk about. And just like junk food sex or junk food, when you eat it, you can often get a quick hit, a quick high, a bit of energy, and then usually it's followed by this plummet of your blood sugar and a loss of energy and even feeling remorse, where gourmet food is something that nourishes you. It contains all kinds of vitamins and minerals that build you for the long term, you know, and it's a meal that becomes memorable and you want to go back to. It can sustain you for a long time. And junk food sex isn't just in the realm of casual sex. Even couples who've been together for 20 years could be having a steady diet of junk food sex. And this ends up affecting every part of their lives. And here, this is where we come back to this impact, because not only does the relationship suffer and the people end up growing apart, but other areas of their lives are also affected by having stifled sexual energy. So this can show up as many different things, like having trouble orgasming, not coming together, a lack of orgasmic control, people who feel stuck in their career, a lack of creativity, overeating, food and weight issues, PMS, difficult menopause. The kind of barometer that I use for this is if your sex life is not making you feel energized and blissful and rejuvenated and connected, then you're doing it wrong. And of course, that's not a judgment. It's simply that sex was meant to be this totally energizing experience. And if that's what you're getting out of it, then you're tapping into it in the proper way. So I was working to give you an example with a couple who'd been together for 30 years, and they've got three kids of varying ages from under 10 to teenage, and they're very good. They communicate a lot, but they've had some long-standing sexual issues. And in part of that scenario, they've also had a lot of financial issues. They've struggled for a long time. They've often been just at the edge of bankruptcy, you know, or they haven't been able to get past a certain point. And as we began to work together, every single time that we would clear a major issue, they would literally get new clients. It was like clockwork. We'd go through this big thing that had making them, that they'd been stuck. They'd, like, their phone had basically not been ringing for 3 weeks. And literally the day after we'd clear it, they'd have offers come in from three different people. And I've seen this happen again and again, you know, these financial issues clear up through that connection. I've also seen mysterious health issues clear up, particularly when they're connected to reproductive organs. Like, I tend to think that anything which is connected to a reproductive ailment has a sexual stifling or sexual suppression at its root. So, you know, the absolute key to getting into gourmet sex, and this is probably one of my biggest sexual secrets personally, is learning how to surrender. And, you know, gourmet sex isn't about a series of mechanical movements. You know, that's very little of what good sex is made of. Good sex is more of a spontaneous dance. It's learning how to be open. It's letting yourself be seen, to be vulnerable. And to get there, that the journey is to remove whatever blocks that you have to getting into this space. And honestly, that's a lifelong journey. You know, I've been at this for over 20 years, and I'm still always finding new things to clear and new levels of intimacy to get to. And it only gets better. You know, I feel like I've reached some of the deepest, most satisfying places in my intimate life in the last year and a half. And I've had some very transformational experiences over my time, but I keep focusing on it. And I know there's always another level to go. You know, it's never finished. You never arrive. And so in my view, so long as you're in motion, so long as you're committed to working on this stuff, you're already changing it. So At this point, what I want to do is invite you to bring any questions forward. So I have a list here of questions that have been submitted, but if you're calling in and you want to ask me a question directly, the way that you do it is to hit star 2 on your handset. Okay, so I have no live questions. I'm going to go to the submitted questions. So give me a moment to bring them up. Okay, question number 1. Is this salon only for couples? Can I, as a woman in a relationship, take the course without my partner? Is it necessarily for the intimacy that both of us take the commitment to take the virtual course? So ideally, yes. Ideally, both people are committed to this process and they're working on it. It's geared for both of you. If you're in a relationship where things are quite stuck and your partner you don't think is going to be very receptive to this, then by all means, I would sign up for the course. I would watch the videos. I would do the home play that you can. There's also going to be home play assigned for single people as well as couples. And you might be able to entice your partner into coming and sitting with you and watching a video. It's different than trying to talk your partner into going to see a sex coach. If you can, like, just get your partner to sit in bed with you and watch a video or two, they'll probably be open to watching more and then doing more of the course with you. And that may not happen right away, but you can learn a lot of skills from watching the course, the videos, and doing the course yourself that you can bring back into the relationship and hopefully shift the energy and the vibration so that your partner does feel more open to participating in more of a growth process with you. So question number 2, are there signs in men, like their attitude or behavior, that a wise woman would look out for before having sex with someone to give her an idea that he is more likely to be a wonderful, generous lover? So, and then on the flip side, subtle things or characteristics of someone who will not be. Well, I think you can generally read this in the person, you know, like for me, I mean, is the person a wonderful and generous person? They'll probably be a wonderful and generous lover. Are they self-aware? Are they really tuned in with themselves? And you probably won't know that unless you're tuned into yourself and you're able to read that in somebody else. For me, one of the main things that I look for in a partner is integrity. And so it's saying what you say you're going to do, showing up, being reliable, being honest. Integrity to me is like this all-encompassing piece. And so that word really kind of reveals to me the character of the person, right? Do they follow through? Do they execute? Because the whole journey that we're looking for here is being able to trust. When I said that surrender is the key to gourmet sex, then it's all about being able to trust someone, right? You need to be able to trust your partner. And if you can't let go and trust, you're not going to be able to access these really powerful places. So, third question, can I do the salon if my spouse will be out of town for the first 2 weeks? Is this something that we can both have to commit to? I know it's ideal, but his work schedule is very demanding, or can I do the studying and then share it with him? It's fun. Like, you have lifetime access to this course, and so there is a certain momentum to doing it as it's going along live with the group, and you have, you know, you have the Q&A questions. But even if your partner can watch the videos, I mean, I provide a downloadable MP3 audio of all the video content and the Q&A calls, and so feasibly, they can, so long as they have internet access, they can still watch this even if you're not by their side, or they can download the material and watch it as they're on the go. So I would, you know, and then you can communicate it about it while you're going through the course, even if you're not in the same city together. Next question. You always speak of endless nights and days of sex. What about things like UTIs and getting sore/dry? Are they a result of some kind of emotional blockage or underlying resistance or just a natural physical response and how to deal with it? So, yeah, I do think that things like that are a result of emotional blockage or resistance. Getting sore and dry is basically, as a woman, your body is saying, okay, I'm not quite turned on right now. What are you going to do? And that could be twofold. It usually is. It's like, what emotional piece, your connection is missing that you need to tap into to get more turned on. And then physically, you know, what do you need right now? Like, your body, it's not about overriding your body. And this is why I don't let my clients use lubricant, because you're for, say, vaginal sex, anal sex, yes, it does not lubricate naturally, but the vagina does. And the vagina is wet when you are aroused and you are open to penetration, period. End of story. And a man is erect when he is fully ready to penetrate. And so if, you know, a man is having a slowing down in his erection and a woman's losing her lubrication, it's because they need to reconnect somehow, or they need to communicate about where they're at and rev up that energy and that connection again. So it's about communication and checking in and not overriding these things. It sometimes frustrates me when I see like this idea, oh, just throw on some lubricant, because it's not, I'm like I said, I'm about getting to the solution and not throwing on a band-aid. And if you're constantly using band-aids, you're never really going to grow in this area of your life. Next question. My new fiance, who is 48 years old, is accustomed to come only when masturbating himself. We love to have sex, but we'd like to learn how to come conventionally, and I mean with him in a more conventional orifice. Any suggestions? So I don't know enough about this situation, but my guess is that this person, the 48-year-old, has probably been single for a while, and so he's been masturbating for a while by himself, and so he is just programmed with his neural wiring to get to orgasm by himself. And so to reprogram him, he's going to have to probably let go initially of the idea of getting to orgasm and just connect with you and to be sexual and to breathe. I talk about these breathing techniques in the Coming Together video series, and I'll talk more about the depth of these things in the salon itself. But you need to be prepared for a transition period to break this pattern. You can, but like I said, your brain and your body have been wired now that's how you get to orgasm. And you have to go through the steps to rewire those patterns. You can totally do it, but it's going to take time and patience, and he may temporarily have to forego his orgasm as the body learns that, oh, okay, if we go this direction, I can still get to orgasm. All right, no problem. I got it. But there might be a transition period. Next question. My boyfriend and I have been together for 2 years, and we never come together. He always waits for me to have an orgasm first, which isn't, I'll just say here, a bad thing necessarily. It's probably a good idea for the men to do that. But I think it may have only happened once or twice where we did come together. I have been with partners who I had this experience with, and so I do miss it. My boyfriend also doesn't like that it takes me 30 to 40 minutes to get to orgasm, so I decided to avoid sex altogether and just give him oral. What do you think is my problem? He says that it's my problem and that if it takes me that long, but I'm used to having long intercourse, so maybe I'm spoiled, or he says it's all in my head and I should be able to just come in and all wet and ready to go and we'd be done in 5 minutes. He doesn't like to warm up with foreplay for too long either. This is a problem. Please help. So I bet, you know, just the kind of the answer is in the question, really, right? It's like, if women are, I mean, there's an old Taoist sexual expression. It says that, sexually speaking, women are like water. They're slow to boil, but they keep on boiling. Men are like fire. They're quick to ignite and they're quick to extinguish. And so the trick is to find the medium ground. Women learn how to become warmer faster. Men learn how to slow down and simmer for longer. And so, I mean, quick sex is fine once in a while, but I really would prefer to have, say, like a 3-hour sex date once a week than, you know, five minute sexual encounters throughout the week. And because there's a whole buildup that takes place of foreplay, of connecting, of emotionally connecting, and then translating that into a deeper sexual experience. And so both people have to be on the same page with that, right? That the experience becomes this multidimensional connection and lovemaking on every possible level. And so, I mean, you know, to reach these deeper vaginal states of orgasm, like G-spot orgasms and cervical orgasms, generally a woman needs to be sexually aroused for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, you know, an hour to tap into those spaces. The more that you tap into them with your partner, the more available they'll be. But especially if you haven't been that connected or it's a sporadic connection, it takes a while to get there. And so, I don't know. I mean, I'd suggest if you've watched any of my videos to maybe get your boyfriend to watch with them too. But it's an ongoing focus on keeping your emotional connection strong, making sure that you're constantly clearing the space between you and communicating with each other, and that sexually you're also communicating what you want. And if you're really not on the same page with that, you may not be sexually compatible unless that, you know, you're both willing or committed to longer periods of sex, let's say. So next question, please help me to get my Chinese girlfriend over all the 3,000 years of stories of sex and how it should end at 40 years old. So many sheltered ideas to overcome. So it's interesting because at 5,000 years in the past, you can actually find all this evidence, like I've said, of really powerful sexual connection and sex being used as medicine. And I've often told this story that when you'd go to see a physician in the day, they would assess your condition. They would do a pulse reading or, you know, some other kind of diagnosis through your tongue, perhaps. And then they would prescribe, let's say, a pot of herbs for you to go home and take. They would give you some kind of acupuncture treatment, and then they would prescribe a sexual position for you to go home and have sex 3 times a day for the next 30 days in that position, because it would direct all of this healing energy to these different organs. So I would suggest that, watch my videos, both the Coming Together series and the How to Be a Well-Fucked Woman, those free videos, if you can get your girlfriend to watch them with you, and then seek out some of this. You know, I do talk about these Taoist ideas and techniques in my work, but, you know, there's other sources as well that you can check out to go deeper. And right there, you're kind of going to the source of where it all began, especially in her particular background. Next question. My wife has never been able to have an orgasm during intercourse with any of her lovers. We would like to get involved to help our sex life become fun again. So, you know, there's a lot of information that I don't have there. But, you know, again, I would refer you to those videos that I've got. They kind of give you a sprinkling of all kinds of stuff, right? Like, to me, orgasm is the final release in the sexual act. And so to get there, like even symbolically, it's about how much can you let go? How much can you unwind? What I said earlier, the concept of surrender. The pathway to surrender is being able to clear all the sexual blocks, whatever is keeping you stuck, that keeps you afraid of truly letting go, afraid of truly being vulnerable, you know, any beliefs that you hold about yourself as a person, that you hold about sexuality, that you have any kind of lingering shame about sex. We are fraught with this stuff. I don't really believe that anyone can grow up in our culture without some kind of sexual hang-up or some kind of, you know, hang-up around intimacy. And I don't, you know, hang up doesn't need to be like sexual molestation. Hang up can just be like not knowing the potential of what sex can do for you. And that's because we live in an era of such, you know, I use this phrase a lot, bipolar sexuality, where sex is everywhere, but we're not really allowed to have it and enjoy it. And so people, until they consciously reconcile that dichotomy within themselves, they will never get past the blocks that they have. And the only way to, you know, get to that place of release and orgasm and letting go is to let go of those blocks. You have to do the work to reap the rewards. So, next question. I can make myself have a G-spot orgasm, but no squirting ejaculate. What am I not doing? So G-spot orgasms, yes, they can be separate from ejaculation. G-spots are the source of the squirting phenomena where people can actually projectile across the room. Every type of orgasm will generally release some kind of ejaculate, even if you don't really notice it, but it's the G-spot that produces the gushing experience. And usually when you hook your fingers around that area where you find the G-spot zone and there's this ridged tissue, it takes a certain kind of hooking with the fingers and like a really intense pressure that will actually, it's like milking these ducts or these glands where the ejaculate comes out of. And so it's really just a matter of experimentation and trial and error and keeping at it and seeing if you can find any videos on it or, the other thing, I guess it's also, there's a lot to it, but, it's feeling relaxed and open enough because ejaculation, it makes a woman feel like she's going to pee. And if a woman feels like, oh my God, I'm going to pee, like her first reaction is to actually tighten and clench up her muscles. And to ejaculate, you actually need to bear down and push out. It's like this intense, like pushing, 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 which is very different from a clitoral orgasm, which is more of a contraction. So that's, you know, a little nutshell about it. Next question. So this is very similar. About a year ago, sex with my husband suddenly got way better. Yay for us. I did, however, unfortunately, start coming in large quantities and we had to start putting a mat under us because we soaked the mattress. Yay for us. I'm curious what the fluid is, though, as when it's dried, it smells like urine. When I have an orgasm, are the muscles contracting so hard that it's pushing on my bladder, or does female cum smell like urine? I've Googled and looked on Dr. Oz, and all I can ever find is that a woman can cum up to 1/4 cup of fluid. I would say that this is accurate to the quantity that I have ejaculated. I plan to try to relax the muscles even more to help ease the amount, but neither of us really care. He's probably ecstatic that he can do this for me. You know, there are some women who can produce an immense amount of fluid, like clearly you do. And I had an ex-partner whose partner was like this, and it would become this bone of contention with them because when they'd want to have sex and she'd want to have an orgasm, like an ejaculation, it was a huge production. They had to have towels and sheets and everything stocked, and then there'd be this huge amount of washing to do afterwards. And so it's just part of the territory. Like, really, I think your boyfriend ought to be collecting a cup and then taking it to work with him the next day to use as a power drink. That would be my ultimate solution. So, lovely, you have a gift, and just understand that. Just to touch on one point, though, it's not urine. They've tested the composition of it, and it's got something that's called PSA, which is prostate specific antigen, which is found in the male prostate gland in the anus, and it comes through the urethra, and so it could be tinged with urine, or if you have, say, weak pelvic muscles, there might be a little bit of urine escaping at the same time, but ejaculate itself is not urine. It's something entirely different. Next question. My question is more to do with a woman-to-woman relationship. I'm currently in one. I do miss men, and we're wondering how it would work to introduce a third person into our relationship. Man for two women who have a strong relationship. Do you have any experience or tips? We're just wondering how it'll work and if it's possible for us to have a healthy relationship with a man as a third one in. I said it is a strong relationship, but I can't help and pretend that I don't miss men and penis and their smells and everything. At the same time, my relationship with her has been one of the most inspiring, nourishing adventures in my life and still is, and I don't want it again to be either an either-or situation. So this is essentially a question about open relationships, and this is a big topic, and there's so much out there these days about, is monogamy natural, is it unnatural, and people trying to prove that it is unnatural through historical evidence. And I'm a very open person, and I've experienced open relationships, and so you know, my bottom line through my experiences and observing lots of people is that the only time an open relationship ever has a chance of working is when both people are in an amazingly strong place. So what you're describing is that you have a strong relationship and it's, you know, it could be possible to bring someone in, especially being that they're another sex, that you're kind of helping to facilitate each other's desire for something different, and be honest about that. But the absolute key is communication and openness and discussing everything as it's happening, right? That there is no secrecy. The grand place where open relationships fail is where there's already trouble in the relationship and the people decide, hey, let's go have sex with other people because it's not that great with us. And all that does is widen the divide between the two people and makes it worse and worse. So that's the absolute worst time, but that's not really what you're describing here. So my suggestion for you is to keep talking about it and be totally upfront with the guy that you bring into it. I think a guy might find that quite an ego boost, really, to have that experience. So you probably won't have trouble finding a guy. And then it's really just about you being completely, radically honest with your partner throughout the entire process. So next question, what is the best method or position for having sex to come together? Well, that's whatever does it for you. That's a pretty grand question. It's probably the position where both people feel like they have the most amount of control. And so let's say you're in a position like doggy style where the guy might find it in that, with that visual and that angle and that intensity, it might find that it's harder for him to gauge where his edge is, then that might not be the best position. Say if it was missionary position where he's better able to gauge, okay, this is where my threshold is. I can stop at this point and pause if she's not quite there yet, and vice versa. So that's probably the best suggestion I can give you, is where you, something that's a good position for both of you, but you still have a gauge of where that threshold is for each other. Next question. What is the best tip that you can give to a young couple who have never been with anyone but each other and lack experience? We both love sex but I worry that after being together for 7 years since we were 16 and not anyone else, that we might lose our spark if we don't continue to work at it. So I'll interject here and say anyone can lose and will lose their spark if they don't continue to work at it. My sex drive is much higher than his, and he is very shy about talking about sex. We have both agreed to attend one of your overseas workshops when we are both available. Well, that's fantastic. So he's going to have to overcome his shyness, because the talking and the communication is absolutely foundational to anything that happens in your relationship. You know, sometimes people come to me and they're talking about the sex and then their emotional connection and communication as though they're two separate things and they have no connection to the other. And nothing could be further from the truth. Like, the level of openness and communicability you have with each other, how much you trust and you can say whatever's going on for you, that totally influences your sexual experience. And so, you know, like, I, for example, in my salon, I'm going to be talking about communication techniques for people to use to help break that ice. Like I said, for me, even when I was younger, I had a lot of trouble. I would almost get mute. Like, it felt hard. I would get this sort of like frozenness where it was hard for me to express, like, even identify, like, what do I want right now? And what do I need right now? And how do I say it? And it's practice and it's baby steps. And ideally, you're both aware, okay, we want to work at opening up our communication more and becoming more honest and becoming more able to express what we need in the moment. And once you're able to do that, then that usually will, like I said, shift the sexual experience. And the working at it piece is essential. It's absolutely essential. Like, it's not possible to maintain a healthy, powerful relationship over the long term without working at it. It doesn't just happen. It's like exercise, right? You don't get fit by just sitting on the couch and watching the years go by. You get fit by going to the gym, going to yoga, going to Pilates, swimming, running, whatever it is that you do keeps your body in shape. And your relationship is exactly the same. You need to put in the time and the focus and the energy and vary it up. It's like an exercise program that you, like going to the gym, after 6 weeks, your body plateaus with the same muscles being worked in the exact same way. You have to shake it up. You have to give yourself a new challenge. And the intimate life, your intimate life is the same thing. You need to constantly be looking at new ways, new territory to move into. So, you know, don't be intimidated by that, because, you know, you're not, when people have this saying, oh, I don't want to be married to the same person for 30 years. Well, let's put it this way. If you're doing personal growth work on yourself and you're both doing personal growth work, you're not married to the same person for 30 years, because that person who you are, who they are, is constantly changing. You're not the same person. And so if especially people are into that aspect of personal development, it is going to be you know, easier to feel like you're in a different relationship, because you are. Next question. I struggle to initiate sex with my partner. Any suggestions? Well, partly it's just to do it. I mean, if there are any blocks that need clearing between you, and then it's about communicating on an ongoing basis, because if you're feeling stuck to initiate, there might be stuff that's sitting in the ethers that you guys haven't talked about, that hasn't been resolved, and it's sort of holding you back from really going there. If it's like simply a physical thing that you have to dive into, you just have to start. And it's kind of like that idea of getting into the zone with something, is that, or let's say that you haven't exercised in a while and you decide, hey, I'm going to start running again. So the first time that you go for a run, and the first 15 or 20 minutes are going to be awkward and probably a bit clumsy. You'll feel tired out. You'll want to stop and catch your breath. And then maybe 20, 25 minutes into it, your body kicks in, your endorphin kicks in, and you feel energized, and the run starts to carry you. And so just know that if it's a new habit that you're trying to create for yourself, initially you may have that bumpiness in it. You know, you may not be able to fully engage or let yourself go until you get a little further into it. So just keep at it, is what I would say. Okay, I'm interested in learning more about sex and harnessing creative energy and vitality in general. What are some things besides a commitment to daily orgasms, good stuff, that a single girl, newly sober and wary of jumping into intimate relationships, can do to access this energy? Well, the daily orgasm commitment is fantastic. And the only other thing I would add to that was to ensure that when you're doing or practicing your daily orgasm, that you are breathing and that you're constantly focusing on, I talk about this in both the Coming Together video series and the Well-Fucked Woman video series, breathe, is that the best way to collect and harvest your high quality sexual energy is to breathe throughout the sexual encounter, whether it's on your own or with your partner. And you want to take a good 4-count inhale, 4-count exhale, deep, steady breath as much as possible. Throughout your masturbation, you just stop and you breathe. You stop and you breathe, and or you just continue to breathe throughout the entire act. And I look at the connection between sexual energy and creative energy. And when I'm really aware of wanting to tap into that sexual energy, I'll often start a new creative project, and I'll be deliberately, say, stimulating myself or masturbating or having sex with the knowledge of harvesting that energy and then thinking about channeling it into those creative projects. I was working on a big writing project last year, and I had a daily ritual where before I would go to the cafe to write, I would masturbate for 30 to 45 minutes and be breathing exactly like I described. And then I would do a little meditation and do some brain gym, and then I would go to the cafe and write. And I produced some of my most prolific, I think, amazing material during that time period. So kind of connecting it up with a creative project to help reinforce that awareness for you as well, I think is helpful. Next question. I would love more info and techniques on deep throating and how to connect on a deeper level with my partner during both foreplay and intercourse. So I'm just, there's a lot that I could answer that with, but I'm just going to actually hone in on the theme of the throat. So the throat, you know, it's symbolic for your voice and how you communicate and how you express yourself. And I've already touched on how the emotional communication, verbal communication is such a key for foreplay. And a lot of people make the mistake of kind of segregating their sex life, their sexual encounters to this one part of their life, one portion of their life, and everything else is separate from that. So, you know, their maybe their Friday night sex date happens and it just kind of stays encapsulated on Friday night, where I'm encouraging you to let that energy spill out all over your life. And so the next morning, you might have a quick makeout section, but you don't, you know, fully have to have intercourse. That, you know, that evening you're, or that throughout that day, you're texting each other like, hey, wasn't that amazing? Or I loved it when you did this. The next day you might be like, you know, walking through the hallway and pass your partner and you just throw them up against the wall and start molesting them. But we want to think about this simmer that's always kept up, because if you have that simmer that carries on between you throughout and in between your actual quote unquote intercourse sections, sessions, you're going to be able to connect much more deeply. So that's part of it. The deep throating thing, one really good suggestion is a position where your throat is really propped open. And so as the woman, let's say that you're lying on a bed and you're on your back and you're going to have your neck or your head kind of extending off the edge of the bed. And so it's, you know, kind of tilting up and back, and then your partner can straddle you from that position. That position just opens the throat right up and can make it easier for any size penis to be lodged into your throat to practice deep throating. So that would be a quick tip that I would suggest. I feel strongly about your beliefs regarding sex and sexual energy. How do I get my partner on board if she doesn't feel the same way? Like I said, I think the videos are a great resource. Like sometimes I have people who will just, you know, send their partners some of my emails or my blog posts, but the videos are nice because you can sit down together. The videos themselves are usually like the free video series that I'm talking about. They're 15 minutes each. And I follow them up with some, you know, discussion questions and some home play. And that's a really good way to just kind of neutrally watch something. You're not, say, dragging your partner to a sex therapist. And let them, because, you know, the stuff that I speak about, I'm talking about things, deliberately presenting ideas that I'm hoping you're going to, you know, remind people like, oh, my gosh, that's me. You know, we've had that in our relationship, like that sexual polarity and chemistry idea that I talk about. That's so common for so many people. And they hear about that concept and they're like, oh, my gosh, that's us. And they'd never had it articulated before. They could only, you know, they could kind of sense it, but they didn't quite know how to express it. And then it's like it's presented to them and they're like, oh, we actually have that. So if you can at all entice your partner into watching the videos with you, that would be my suggestion, you know, is, and then to talk about it, to encourage, you know, hopefully that will open up some thought and encourage a discussion for you guys. So next question is about the salon. This woman says, we choose not to have screens in our home. We own a business and we try not to keep internet stuff in the house. And how will the format be laid out in the salon? So, you know, I'm going to go into this in a moment because I'm going to outline some of the, like, the layout for the salon, and we can talk about that a little bit more. So that was it for the questions that I've had pre-submitted. And if you have any other questions for me and you're on the call, okay, so here's a few that just came in. There's a lot that came in. You guys have been busy. You guys don't ask me the questions, but you're going to put them all, put them all on the internet. Okay. All right. Let's see what I can do here. All right. What you shared about masturbating before you create something, would you bring yourself to orgasm, though? Or are you saying that you masturbate without climaxing because then the energy is used towards a creative endeavor? This is a fantastic question. It depends. Sometimes I go through different stages where I feel like, at least with a clitoral orgasm, sometimes I feel like I lose a little bit of energy when I have it. And so sometimes I feel like I need it, because when you have the actual orgasm, you get a flood of oxytocin, which is a kind of a relaxing, soothing hormone that goes flying through the body. So it depends how I feel. If I feel like I'm in this very energized space, I would experiment and see what happens. Like, try to have the orgasm. But here's the thing. If you breathe, if you're doing that really deep, steady breath, the difference between whether you orgasm or not orgasm will be very, very minor in terms of the energy difference that you feel. And so the key is the breath. And beyond that, I would say just experiment or try to tune in. You know, ask yourself, what do I need today? And then go with that. Next question. Do you believe that watching porn while masturbating desensitizes you to the intimacy and depth of sex? Yes, I do. And I have no moral judgment about porn or, you know, like, condemnation of it being out. I mean, if I was to really get into a big discussion about it, maybe, but generally no. And so my kind of side with it is really what you're saying, is that I think over time people do get desensitized and they have to wean themselves off of porn, and that a certain kind of vibration or level of stimulation or a certain type of fantasy to bring them to orgasm. And so, like I said with the example earlier about this 48-year-old man, is the key would be to go through this transition phase. And so while you're initially trying to stimulate yourself without masturbating, without looking at porn, there might be a period where you don't feel very aroused. You know, you don't feel like you're really, like anything's really happening in your body. Just breathe. Practice what I just described. Breathe throughout the experience and just really try to go inside and tune into your body instead of the external stimulation that you've had before. Tune into yourself. And it will shift. It just might take a little bit of time. But the results are totally worth it, and you'll have much more powerful orgasms, much more energizing orgasms, and you'll be able to connect better with yourself and a partner. Next question. How can I have more powerful orgasms as a man? Breathe. So the technique that I just described, did I describe it fully? I did a little earlier, I guess, about breathing throughout masturbation, and especially as you get close to orgasm, like a 7 out of 10, breathe, pause and breathe and breathe and breathe. You can build up again, pause again, breathe and breathe and breathe. Breath is everything. Breath carries energy throughout the body. So long as you're breathing deeply throughout the entire experience, that will give you very powerful orgasm. Next question. We purchased your videos on the G-spot, and when we try to experience it, can get really uncomfortable and make me feel like I have a bad urinary tract infection. Is that something that will stop as you continue to massage, or are we doing it wrong? So I'm not exactly sure what you're doing, but somebody else mentioned earlier about whether you have any other blockages. Like, the G-spot is this whole other, as you know in the video series, this whole other, you know, area of stimulation. There's much more emotional depth connected to it. You really have to be able to let go and surrender and to hope and to open. So if I was working with you privately, I would be looking at all of that stuff, you know, to see, are you guys really deeply connected? Are there any blockages there? You know, what else can be done to clear that space so that you can truly let go? And, you know, and here there's a second question that you've added, which is, my husband and I have been together for 30 years this year. Our sexual relationship has had its ups and downs, to say the least, but we're always working to make it fresh. But I still struggle with things like being wet enough or wanting sex as often as he does. You talk about sexual hangups. How do you begin letting go of those hangups? I was molested as a young child. I'm now 48 years old, and my husband is aware of my past experiences. I also struggle with my body image. He doesn't see what I see and loves my body, but the image I have makes me struggle. How can I begin to overcome these things? So here's, like, this is actually a great example of what I'm talking about, any kind of stuff that's lingering in the space. I don't know what kind of past work you've done to clear those experiences out of your system. And that's something that, you know, I talk about in the Well Fucked Woman Salon, I'll talk about in the Coming Together Salon, is this idea of clearing any blockages. And so just hearing all that, and then hearing what you said about getting these, you know, the discomfort through the G-spot stimulation, that makes total sense to me. And so,
like, I would want to know what kind of clearing and, you know, therapy or treatment have you done around these past experiences? And then even, you know, currently to kind of talk through that stuff. So this is what I mean about this being a lifelong journey. And there's always another level to clear. It could be some past stuff that you're just realizing actually influences you still. It could be something current that happens, like an argument that you had at breakfast time, and then you go to have sex with each other and you're not feeling very into it because you really haven't finished the topic that you started in the morning, right? Like, clear that up, and then I guarantee you, you'll feel more like having sex. But we often don't make those connections, and that's where the blocks are. So next question, how do I fully relax my mind during sex so I can orgasm? So again, that's a really big area. Like if I could say, like, mostly all my work is about how you could relax your mind during sex or how you can let go during sex. So the breathing is a huge technique, right? If you can get into your breath, it helps you to get into your body, into yourself. It helps you to more deeply connect to your partner. That would be one really big thing that I would say about that. And, you know, kind of like touching on this other person's question is, like, where else in your life might you have any blockages? Like, this other person's blockages were fairly obvious. You know, she's had an incident or incidences of sexual abuse in the past. But, you know, they could be anything as subtle as, like, okay, as a woman, most women internalize a belief that if they have a lot of sex and they really like sex, you're a slut. And so our culture does a lot to reinforce that belief. And it's changing, sort of, but I think that most women internalize that idea. And until you really look at that stuff, you aren't able to fully move past it. So in the work that I do with people in the salons that I do, that's always a big component, is doing like an inventory to be sure that, hey, we haven't got any of these lingering beliefs that are still active in our sex lives. So next question. My partner and I have a great sexual connection, but I usually get a UTI as soon as we have sex every day. We need to keep it to every 2 days so I don't get a UTI. So here we go to the same theme, is, you know, what else is going on in the relationship that might be preventing that closeness? Maybe your body needs a little bit more time to integrate, or it needs a little bit of time on its own. I mean, this stuff kind of gets opened up with really honest and open communication with each other, and trying to get past what you think you should do or you should be to what's really going on for you. We also have a 4-year-old son, and since then it's been harder to have spontaneous sex. And how do we keep it exciting despite the organization that goes around it? Well, you may not be able to have spontaneous sex very much, so take advantage of it when the time comes up. Otherwise, that's why I recommend scheduling sex, where you set aside the time and the space, you get babysitting, you get people to watch your child, and you go and have sex. And that's, you know, even if you don't have young children and people who have very busy lives, that's still something that I suggest a lot, because you have to prioritize it in a way that actually puts it at the top of your list of things to do and where you put your time and energy to. And if you don't do that, it often just doesn't happen. And then the doesn't happening can be this excuse for, you know, then becoming more distant with each other, and then there's less sex, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So schedule it. It's important. And it doesn't have to be, there's this myth that if you schedule sex, it's not going to be as enjoyable because it's not spontaneous, and it's just not true. You can have a lot of fun with scheduling sex. You can text each other your ideas, your fantasies. You can plan ahead. You can think about focusing on one specific thing. Just because you schedule it doesn't mean that it won't be amazing, off-the-chart sex. I am a single woman, and I'm 32, and I can get myself to orgasm easily, and I do so pretty often, or really just whenever I feel like it. But something that I've noticed that's been with me for as long as I can remember is that I often feel myself tensing my muscles down there just throughout the day. I notice that this is tensing in my groin muscles and not the Kegels. I'm thinking this is my body alerting me that I'm tense in some way. I'm just wondering what you think about that. That's quite possible. Like, there's a lot of I mean, you could do some work with Pilates that would help you to isolate those different muscles and be more aware of when you're clenching and releasing them. You could practice vaginal weightlifting, which again will help you to isolate those different muscles so that you can be aware of when you're clenching and releasing them. Or maybe some body work. At least in Canada, there's some practitioners in physiotherapy who do internal body work. And I know that in California, sexological body workers are licensed to perform internal work. And I don't know enough about what they do and don't do in their training to know like how, but a lot of people speak very highly of it. In Canada, the physiotherapists have a little bit more of like a medical sort of background. But, you know, if you're comfortable with it, that's also something you could check out as a way to kind of like release any energy that's in there. Or you could self-massage, you know, and just kind of open up different areas in your vagina to relax yourself, or massage your inner thighs or your glutes, get some body work, get some really deep tissue body work in those areas. And maybe you've just got some physical patterns that are keeping you held. Next question, how important is physical attraction in terms of intimacy and lifelong transformative sex, in your opinion? I am in a long-term relationship, 5 years, and my physical attraction to my partner has waned, but he's still a wonderful man who is open to this work. So, I mean, if you say that the attraction has waned, I'm wondering if the physical attraction, it sounds like it was there initially, and if it's there, you can likely get it back. So, you know, this whole, everything we've been talking about, like, are there other things that have happened in the last 5 years? Because I often use this analogy when I talk to people about communication. Imagine that you have this clear, transparent pane of glass between you. And so long as you're honest and you're open, that glass stays clear. But as soon as you start to hold something back, there's a sin of omission, or let's say an outright lie, you start to create these splotches of mud on that glass. And over time, that glass gets really thick and cloudy, and it actually turns into a wall, a muddy wall. And if you aren't doing the constant work of keeping it clear and clean, that wall also starts to diminish your desire for one another. So it's a multifaceted thing. To me, like, physical attraction is sort of like incidental. It's a bonus. You know, I've had some fantastic lovers and partners who, if I saw them on the street, I probably wouldn't have looked at them twice. But once I started talking to them and I could feel their energy and the charisma, and then the connection that we had, you know, it didn't really matter. I mean, if they have six pack abs, that's always a bonus, but it's certainly not like a necessity. What are your thoughts on threesomes? My previous boyfriend wanted to bring another woman into our situation. We loved having sex together, but honestly, I really didn't know what to feel about that. I was kind of open and kind of not. I just really don't know if I could handle to watch him have sex with another person. So back, you know, again to the idea that when the relationship is really, really, really solid, that's the only time that it can even possibly work to introduce a new person into it. And if another person, like you, have hesitation about it and you're not sure about it, you know, what's the boyfriend's desire there? Like, if you're coming from this place, like the lesbian couple that, or the, you know, the two women that we were talking about earlier, seems like they're really open about it. They've talked about it and they're both interested in doing it. So right there, they have a much better starting place. But here, if one person's into it, the other person's not into it, it's not such a good situation, right? I think it's better to be really honest about where you're at and then let the chips fall where they may. And then what is the boyfriend's real desire here? Like, what does he want? Is it just a fantasy? Like, what does he want? Like, it takes more conversation, I guess, to get really clear about what each person wants. But I don't recommend going into it if you have hesitation. You need to be totally, fully on board to go into that situation. Next question, as a conscious man, how can we invite a woman who is somewhat unconscious to let go of the thinking constraints and allow herself to surrender, to let go and allow herself to be open to pleasure? Well, you could tie her up. You could blindfold her and restrain her and just take charge. Sometimes when a woman is forced into surrender, and I mean forced like it's an agreed upon force, that can help her to let go. I can get out of her head, get into her body and open up more. you know, that's on a more kind of visceral level. On a more conscious level, it could be something like I've talked about watching my videos and trying to like open people up to different points of view, different possibilities of what's out there, you know, what their sex life can actually look like. Next question. How do you feel about the practice, the specific Taoist practice of a man using sex to energize even with ejaculating by pulling energy up his legs during sex? And when he finally ejaculates, he pulls energy from it. I know that goes against Tantra and some Taoist practices. And that's an excellent question. You know, in my observation, so long as a man is conscious, and he's breathing and he's consciously aware of bringing that energy back into his system, I don't really see men lose a lot of energy. And I've tested this out a lot, and you know, because it's quite fascinating to me, this idea. And you know, maybe energy is energy, right? It's like even the concept of being a breatharian, it's like, if you don't know what that is, it's there's people in the world who I've met some, but there's meant to be more out there who can. So food is energy, right? There's energy in food, and that's why we eat food. Well, what if you could just bypass the food and just, you know, absorb the energy instead? That's the idea of breatharianism. And to me, that's kind of what you're talking about with the ejaculate. I think the only thing that on an energetic level that seems right, from this vitamin mineral level, I think that there potentially can still be a loss, but maybe. I mean, energy kind of transcends the physical expression of it. But just where they talk about how the, you know, all the best nutrients and ingredients and material of the man go into the ejaculate to produce new life, right? And so there could still be these physical ingredients that you are losing through that process. But maybe there's a way that you just extract the energy from it. But in my experience, you know, it's pretty minimal if the person's really conscious of it, the energy loss. Hey, Kim, your input on masturbation, tensing PC muscles only on the exhale and release instead of tightening. Do you have any more physical tips for female masturbation? Thank you for making being single so much more enjoyable. Yeah, tensing PC muscles only on the exhale. I would, you know, I tend to actually tense my PC muscles and like pump energy up my spine. Like, this is a kind of a more advanced Taoist tantric practice, but like the PC muscle, the clenching should really happen to like bring that energy, just like this question before you, bring that energy back into the body. We use the PC pump, the pubococcygeal muscle, that muscle that we clench to stop the flow of urine, to clench it and pump that energy back up into our system. That's how we recirculate that really powerful energy. That's how we keep it. So that would be my suggestion. Otherwise, you just keep breathing. The more loose and relaxed that you are throughout the whole experience, you're allowing more energy to flow and recirculate throughout your body. Next question. Okay, what is a good way to harness sexual energies when you have physical disabilities that inhibit actual sex? So I don't know what your disabilities are exactly, but I mean, I don't know if you can stimulate yourself or if it's like the intercourse part that can't happen, but if there's any possibility to stimulate any part of your body, like nipples, actually, I'm not sure if you are, I think you're a female by your name here, but any part of your genitalia that can be stimulated, and then breathe. Breathe that energy throughout the body. You can even think it, right? There's people who think themselves to orgasm. There was a woman who, she was hooked, I can't remember like her name, but it was in one of the Playboy magazines, like that either I was in or one issue like around it. But there's the woman who can think herself off, right? And she is hooked up. I mean, I can do this now, like, you know, have an orgasm by thinking about it, but it's probably also through years of being able to do it in other ways. But this woman, she's able to like literally think about having an orgasm, and she's hooked up to all these machines that are measuring these responses in her heart rate and her brain function and even in her vagina, and she's having a full-on orgasm. So it's like kind of it's interesting. We've slid into this idea of energy versus physicality here, but it's possible for you to tap into that energy. You can put your imagination on it. You can think about it. You can feel it. If there is any way to kind of physically stimulate yourself to help rev up that energy, to breathe, like imagine that you're breathing into your pelvis. Imagine that when you breathe into your pelvis, you're moving and recirculating this energy throughout your entire system. Your imagination is the first step, I would say, to making that stuff happen. Next question, what is the best way to approach intimacy with an older man? I'm 25 and he is 45. Well, one thing I've noticed, you know, for the longest time, I only dated men who were like 20 years older than me. So because I found that men over the age of 40 or 45 were kind of finished playing games. And so it was kind of like, I like you, you like me, let's just get on with it. And it was good for me, right? Like there wasn't this, oh no, I have to wait 3 days before I call her or whatever. It was like, no, I like you. Let's just come on it. Let's go. Let's go. So, just based on that, I'd say like maybe assume that this person is capable of a level of maturity that you might not be used to in dating 20 somethings. And that goes for, you know, guys and girls, right? Like I think most people, a lot of people have the idea that you have to be cagey or coy or play a certain kind of game to get together with people. And everybody's different. But I guess for me, I was always looking for this deeper, more authentic experience. And I ended up seeing it out in older people. So my thought is just to be really authentic and open and communicate and be real, right? I think at that point in a person's life, generally they're looking for something more real. You know, they've had games, they've had other experiences, and that's what they want. Certainly, I don't know what, you know, this individual is like, but that's my very general advice on that. Will this teleseminar with images be available to show friends and loved ones? Yes, it will. I'm going to post the link on the page on my website where I wrote a blog post about this. And if you're on the email list, I will email you when it comes out. Next question. I am a 29-year-old virgin. How can I feel whole or at least more complete if I don't or haven't been with a partner? I feel like my virginity is debilitating me, and I'm concerned that as I reach 30, my problem will grow worse. How can I heal myself? So, yeah, again, like I don't have the whole picture of everything that's going on for you, but you can still be self-pleasuring. Like I've talked about, if you're moving, you know, when I did the Well Fucked Woman course, I had a lot of single women take that course. And, you know, they were like, oh my gosh, I'm so well fucked, even though I'm not having sex with anyone. And so you can learn through what we've described, these breathing exercises and moving that sexual energy, self-pleasuring. You can move that sexual energy and harness it throughout your body. So I would literally just start there. The problem with, there's no problem with being a virgin other than your sexual energy could be stagnant and it may not have a place. It's maybe getting stuck in your system somehow. And so my suggestion would be to get it moving and then see what happens. That might change your situation as you start to move that sexual energy throughout yourself. Can you please repeat the name of the erotica book that was censored? I would like to read some good erotica, but don't know where to get something good. So the book is called Story of O, and it's, you know, it's originally came out in France, but it's been since translated into English. You might have to order it online. I don't know that, you know, a bookstore would actually carry it, but you can easily order it online. My girlfriend and I have tapped into some amazing sexual energy and have been consistently coming together. She has multiple orgasms. How can I achieve the same? Breath, you know, exactly. I've come back to this all the time. And of all the things that I've learned in, you know, Tantra and Taoism and on my journey, it's so much about breathing. You know, this energy that I talk about, sexual energy, is this power source, is this incredibly, you know, powerful thing that we have at our disposal, like at our fingertips, at our genital tips. And the best way to harness that energy is to move it. And so is to breathe. And to breathe, you're going to recirculate it throughout your body. That's the key for men having multiple orgasms, is to breathe. And next questions. If both partners know that they are both sexually blocked, do they need sex therapy before they watch some of your videos or take a salon? We've been married for 33 years. There's so much love and commitment involved. We just never really were able to get it right. And for reasons that we don't like to address anymore, what comes first? Both I think would be part of your process. But you know, you could start with you, like you saying, reasons that you don't like to address anymore. Like, I don't know if you've tried addressing them and there's been some hiccups and resistance there, but you know, I think if you watch the videos, I would totally suggest watching the videos or even doing the salon first. And then you can supplement with other one-on-one personalized attention. But that'll start to open up all these conversations, all these potentialities that you may not have even knew existed. And then you have a lot more material to work with. Okay, like, hey, I think that polarity concept, that definitely describes us. So let's focus on that. All right, you always hold your breath when we're having sex. Let's focus on that. So there's lots of different things that, you know, you can even see, like, you don't know what you don't know. And so it's helpful to know what you don't know before you start working on, like, fixing what you don't know. Next question. Does the use of sex toys for a woman make it harder for her to orgasm later during intercourse? So if you're talking about specifically a vibrator, like a clitoral vibrator, then yes, it will. If you're only using it sporadically, it probably won't desensitize you that much. But the risk with using a mechanical vibrator very frequently is that it will desensitize you. So you have to think that that object has so much more vibration power than a penis or a tongue. It's just that much more strong. And so then when you go to have intercourse and there's only a much lighter amount of stimulation, yes, it could affect that. So I would use in moderation. If it's a G-spot toy, excuse me, you probably won't notice that much of a difference. Using a G-spot toy can help you find those areas, and then you're more kind of open once you have intercourse. How do you stay open and avoid creating a block after a very open, honest, and transformative relationship ends? You stay open and avoid creating a block after you're very open. I think you just commit to staying open. and presumably, if it was very open and honest and transformative, I'm hoping that it ended that way. You know, if it didn't end that way, then I guess it ultimately wasn't as open and honest. But I think you just, it doesn't mean that you have to change anything, right? Like, to me, that openness and honesty is the key for gourmet transformative sex. And if that's your goal, then you stay faithful to those concepts, you know, no matter what happened. We all have those experiences of having been hurt and having been in a totally raw, open place. And, you know, I know that for me, when I've been in between relationships, like, I try to do this inventory of, okay, so if I did get hurt or something didn't go the way that I liked it, like, where do I need to buff up my skill set? You know, where do I need more healing? Where can I put some attention on to basically increase my relationship IQ so that when I go into my next relationship, I feel even more strong in that area that I was potentially a little bit weak in? Next question. I am a new mom of a 6-month-old and I'm having a hard time getting back into the swing of sex. My husband is amazing to me and is so engaged with our daughter. I'm very proud of my body right now and luckily did not suffer any postpartum depression. I am just having a hard time getting aroused. What can I do to wake up my sexuality again? So, I mean, there are a few like libido activating herbs. I'm always a fan of more herbal approaches to anything that you can take that will help shift things for you. But I guess the bottom line is also to know whether you guys were having any kind of issues before you had your baby and if they've been fully resolved. Like, that stuff usually has an impact. Like, the child comes along and then it'll help to exacerbate some of those differences that have taken place. So, you know, I would suggest that you take an inventory of that and then check out some libido boosting herbs. So that's it for the Q&A part.
So I am going to return back to our slide presentation here and just give you some information about the Coming Together Salon. So, you know, I started creating these, I guess, over the last couple of years where I used to do these in-person workshops or salons, I called them, and then I wanted to be able to start doing these for people at large. For people that were anywhere in the world and could do this stuff from the privacy and the comfort of their own bedrooms. And so, you know, the last one that I did was How to Be a Well-Fucked Woman, which went extremely well. The format of these salons is they are 8 weeks, and there are 6 weeks of modules, basically. Like, you get a set.
The moderator has left the conference.
I'm back again. It looks like I got kicked out of this thing again. It's a little bit odd. But anyway, I'm just was carrying on about the salon itself. So you'll receive videos every week, and that's followed up with home play, discussion, written questions for you to do, and then like physical, sexual technique type assignments as well. And then we follow up a few days later with a live Q&A call, and you can submit questions to me ahead of time, and I will answer them during the live call, or you can call in basically just like this webinar. And there's also like downloadable MP3s, so that if you're on the road and you want to listen to the salons as you're driving someplace or on your way to work or commuting while you're going for a run, you can download that content and listen to it from any place. So the very first salon, we start with the foundation of all relationships. And, you know, I've touched on that already in this call, is the whole idea of communication. And, you know, that clear, open communication has to be there to create the kind of transformative relationship that I'm talking about. And without that being there, that solid foundation, nothing can be built on top of that. And so I talk about, you know, tools for open, nonviolent communication. I talk about how to keep that conversation going in bed as well as out of the bed. The second salon is how to create a conscious relationship. So there's this really interesting idea I'd only discovered recently. In Jewish marriages, they have what's called a ketubah, I believe it's pronounced, or a marriage contract. And so it's this contract that's created when the couple gets married. And funnily enough, I had a couple clients who were like, oh yeah, we have one of those. We've never looked at it though. Yeah, that's kind of ironic, right? And that pretty much sums up most people. Most people get into their marriage, into their relationship, and they don't consciously think, well, what do we want this to be? What do we want the relationship to serve? How do we want it to work for us? Most people just fall into their marriages instead of consciously designing them to create what they want. People tend to internalize these cultural beliefs about, you know, what a relationship should look like or what a marriage should look like instead of creating their own. And so here in this salon, that's what I'm going to teach you to do. The third salon is about, you know, these really amazing Taoist and Tantric secrets, where I'm going to take you through my 20 years of studying these ideas and condense all of that into really simple, actionable steps for you to apply into your relationships. This is where it gets really good. This is the shit, you know. This is the one source that I have learned more from than any other, is this ancient sexual wisdom. This is where we go into full body orgasms, multiple orgasms in men and women, ejaculatory control, learning how to channel your sexual energy. Plus, I'm going to give you this handy pocket guide to different sexual positions based on your mood. So let's say that you are experiencing anger, you can whip out the pocket guide, and I'm going to give you the recommendation for what sexual position to go into when you're feeling angry.
The next salon is on sexual polarity and chemistry. If you watch the video series that I created, both the Well-Fucked Woman and the Coming Together one, I talk about this concept quite a bit. You know, where does chemistry go in a relationship? And I'll tell you exactly where it goes and exactly how you can get it back. And to me, the essence of this idea is why so many women are attracted to 50 Shades of Grey. That book has become so incredibly popular, and the essence of this idea of polarity is why. The next salon is Orgasmopedia, all about orgasms. So what are the keys to deeper vaginal orgasms? How, again, you can better use your creative energy, your orgasmic energy. We'll talk about G-spots in men and women. Cervical orgasms, these more elusive U-spot, AFE-spot, these different areas in the vagina, this big map of stuff. The last salon will be on this maps to men and women. Like, this is probably my favorite here. It's like, what are the secret keys that open each other up, both on emotional levels and physical, sexual levels? So in this salon, you're going to have videos to watch separately, and then you'll come back together and talk about them. So also as part of the salon, the structure is that you will have 2 challenge weeks. And so these are 2 weeks within the 8 weeks where I'm not issuing new video content. You'll have that week where I'll issue you a specific challenge to deepen your practice, to deepen your explorations. Or these are weeks to help you get caught up. If you've been busy or, like someone said, their partner's been out of town, then there's 2 additional weeks structured within that for you guys to catch up or to spend more time on one of the weeks where you felt like you wanted to put more attention. So there's also going to be, I'll give you additional resource suggestions for every salon that'll help you continue on your journey. And, you know, the Q&A calls became, they're an immense resource, because the idea is that you read this stuff or you watch these videos, you go away, you do your home play, you experiment, and then you can, like, come back to me with any questions at all. And that was a really good resource for people, because often people will ask questions that you are thinking to ask, and maybe you're too shy to ask, or you didn't even think to ask that question, and someone has the magic question and answer for an issue that you're going through. So, you know, these salons are basically the main way that I'm working with people these days. I'm going to be phasing out my one-on-one sessions and really just focusing on this stuff. And so, I feel in some ways it's almost more powerful, because I have all this information that I can condense into the videos, into these calls, and just give you the best of what I've got. And then you have it for a lifetime. So you have lifetime access to all of this material. And even since I ran the Well-Fucked Woman last year, I've already had people who are going back to do it the second time or the third time with their partners or on their own, so that they can really digest things. And some of the ideas that maybe they kind of got, you know, initially, now they're much deeper for them, and they're getting them on a much more profound level. So, you know, whatever the stuff is that's been hanging in the ethers in your relationship or that's been really in your face, this salon is an opportunity for me to get in there with you and to finally clear it out of the way, so that you can experience this whole concept of coming together emotionally, physically, sexually, and to really, you know, the most important thing for me is to want to see people harness that sexual power, harness the vessel of the relationship, so that it becomes this sanctuary, this incredibly powerful place that you can always draw strength from, that fuels every other part of your life. So that brings us to the end of the call. If you're on the email list, I will send you out the link so that you can see the recorded version of this, slides and all. So thank you so much for all of your questions. And if you have any other questions about the salon itself, you feel free to email me about them. Otherwise, I really appreciate your being here and your presence. And kudos to you for taking these steps on your sexual journey. Bye for now.
The moderator has left the conference.